The Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts opened 5 years ago. Since September 2011, more than 1.5 million people have passed through the doors of the Kauffman Center and its two performance halls, Helzberg Hall and the Muriel Kauffman Theater. The Kauffman Center not only provided beautiful performance spaces for the Kansas City Ballet, the Lyric Opera of Kansas City, and the Kansas City Symphony, but also an opportunity for those resident companies to show off their talents, many of which have been restricted in the old Lyric Theater at 10th and Baltimore. Joining us now to talk about those three companies are Frank Byrne. He's executive director of the Kansas City Symphony. Frank, always good to have you here.
Thanks, Steve. It's great to be here.
Jeffrey Bentley is back. He's executive director of the Kansas City Ballet. Jeffrey?
Good morning, Steve. Thank you.
Deborah Sandler is the general director and CEO of the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. Deborah, good morning.
Good morning, Steve.
Well, not to open on a negative note all, but the Lyric Theater had its shortcomings. Frank, am I right?
Well, look, the community was very blessed to have a venue at all in which for our organizations to perform. And I think it's safe to say that all three of our organizations maximized every possible opportunity in that space, but it was never built to be a performance venue for companies of our stature. And so while we did our very best, something better was needed and deserved by the community, and we've been incredibly transformed by this move into the Kauffman Center.
Jeffrey, you're nodding your head.
Well, I mean, the audience amenities in the Lyric were non-existent, essentially. So it was always up to the artists on the stage to make the evening thoroughly enjoyable. And now with, you know, with the Kauffman Center, all that pretty much went away.
Yeah.
But I think Frank is right. I mean, there's a lot of communities that don't even have something like the Lyric in their communities. And we did. We made it work, and we grew accordingly. And when the Kauffman Center opened, I think it opened at strategically the most opportune time, because I think in terms of the ballet, our growth was about to be stymied.
Yeah. Frank Byrne, the ballet and the opera have their own space considerations, but the number one thing that comes from your orchestra is sound. Does a symphony sound better in Helzberg Hall?
Well, Helzberg Hall is unequivocally one of the great acoustic spaces in the world. And I should say that the Muriel Kauffman Theater, while designed for a different purpose, also gives excellent sound of our musicians from the pit. So absolutely, it has been transformational. When you think about the fact that a concert hall is an instrument that responds to the sound of an orchestra, and it also has such a profound impact upon what the audience experiences. And Helzberg Hall is unbelievable. But I can say that we are also very pleased with how Muriel Kauffman Theater functions for our musicians in the pit.
You know, to what extent have you been able to draw, Frank, higher caliber candidates to, you know, auditions as a result of being in Helzberg?
There's no question that the quality of life aspect of being able to rehearse and perform in a space like Helzberg Hall is amazing. You know, at the symphony, we're constantly working on all the factors that go into being able to attract and, as importantly, keep the highest quality candidates here in Kansas City. But there's no one who comes here as a guest artist or as a guest performer with the symphony that does not walk away just wowed by this space.
Deborah Sandler from the Lyric Opera, let me bring you in here. What productions could the Lyric not do because of space limit restrictions in the old Lyric Theater?
It's more a matter of technological advancements than specific space, though the wing space was not very good in the Lyric. But we have done a few productions in the last few years which have made extensive use of projections, and I would name among them the Nixon in China production and the Magic Flute, and we recently did a Rusalka, and they all require an extensive use of projections and advanced technology. As scenic design in our field advances, we need to keep up with that, and we are able to do so in the Kauffman in the way that we would not previously have been able to do that, so we are at the forefront of our field. So that's been a wonderful opportunity.
I was going to say, those are all productions you couldn't imagine have staging 5 years ago, right?
Absolutely correct. And moving forward, we will have many of the same, you know, opportunities to do really fantastic work. So we're thrilled about that.
Jeffrey Bentley, what do your dancers say about the Kauffman Center and how it contributes to their performances?
Well, first of all, we had the serendipitous experience of being able to open the Todd Bollender Center, which is our home, and the Kauffman Center opened within 30 days.
Not bad.
So within that period
of time,
yeah, and it was a sea change for our organization. It has absolutely changed our competitiveness on the national scene. We have dancers now, and they come to a state-of-the-art home where they work every day, and then they come to this world-class performing arts center. And it has allowed us to expand the company. Our company was 25 dancers when the Kauffman Center opened. It is now 40 when we include our second company as part of that mix. We can do much larger productions. We would never have been able to do the scale of our new Nutcracker in the previous theater. We would never certainly have been able to do the enormously successful full-length production of Swan Lake or next year's Sleeping Beauty. Hmm. So it has, you know, and if you look at just some of the numbers, if you just want to look at data, our ticket revenue since the Kauffman Center opened to today went from $1.6 million in ticket sales to $4.2 million.
Oh my gosh.
In just that period of
time.
That's
remarkable, isn't it?
It's remarkable. Actually, which means there's more resources. We can add dancers. We can add technology. We're happy to have the symphony play in our pit for every performance. You know, it used to be where we would have to choose one of our repertory performances and do it to a non-symphony production.
Yeah.
Now all of our productions that require symphony, we have symphony.
I wonder if the three of you could wax nostalgic here a little bit and think about your favorite or most memorable performances from the last 5 years. Deborah, start us off. What just your own personal favorites?
Well, that's a tough question because I've loved many of them for different reasons.
Sure.
I'm pretty excited about what's happening in the next 3 weeks. As you know, I was not here for the first year. I came the second year. I would probably have to count Magic Flute and The Silent Night. And I neglected to mention Silent Night when you asked me previously about fantastic productions that we could only have done in the Kauffman. And Silent Night was a magnificent production. So that would probably have to be at the top of my list.
Frank Byrne?
I can remember many performances, Steve, that are inspiring, but when it comes down to it, I gravitate away from thinking about a performance by a particular guest artist, and the thing that most stands out to me is the artistic growth of our orchestra in the past 5 years, and just sitting there and listening to the sound and the precision and the passion of our orchestra, that is what has thrilled me and has me so excited about the season coming up.
So you're not going to answer my question.
That's correct.
Jeffrey Bentley.
I'll be happy to. I'll say that two of my favorites, and it's like, you know, which of your children do you love the most?
Well, I get that.
Was our production of Dracula,
mm-hmm.
and last season's production of Swan Lake, which was incredibly successful from an artistic as well as an audience standpoint. But what I'm really excited about, and I'm not going to tell you too much about it, is next year is our 60th anniversary Diamond Jubilee year.
Wow.
And we're going to be putting on a heck of a year here in the Kauffman Center and in the community. And we are looking forward to that. And we'll be talking more about that later.
Deborah Sandler, I was really struck by what Jeffrey just said about ticket sales growth for his organization. How about yours at the Lyric Opera?
Well, there was an unprecedented increase in the number of ticket buyers from the last year in the Lyric into the first year at the Kauffman.
Can you put numbers on that?
You know, Steve, I'm in vacation land. It was a lot more. It allowed us to start to have conversations with a vastly increased universe of people, which has guided us through today and is allowing us to do a lot of new programming. I mean, Jeff talked about the increase in the number of dancers that he has. We have a slightly different business model, but we have now started a resident artist program, which is something akin to his second company, and we have started an entire second series to satisfy the various interests of our current audience and our future audience. So it has been a tremendous boon to our growth. And let me just take a moment here to say happy
Real
birthday,
quickly,
Kaufman
Deborah.
Center. Yeah.
Yeah, that's great words. Can you answer this question, Frank Byrne, about ticket sales
yes.
growth?
Yes. Moving from the previous year in the Lyric to this one, I think we saw over a 40% increase in revenue. The
wow.
amazing thing, though, is that we at the Symphony have sustained it, you know, after 5 years, because so many other venues that we studied had a great year one, less year two, even less year three. And after 5 years, we had the highest attendance and the highest performance revenue in our fifth year. We had concert purchasers to the Symphony from all 50 states.
That's amazing. Well, Frank Byrne is going to remain with us for a bit here. I want to thank Jeffrey Bentley, Executive Director with the Kansas City Ballet, Deborah Sandler, the General Director and CEO on vacation from the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. Deborah, Jeffrey, thanks so much for your time. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're coming to you live from the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts in downtown Kansas City as we celebrate the fifth anniversary of this absolutely magnificent structure. What's your favorite performance at the Kauffman Center over the past 5 years? Our phone number, 816-235-2888. Again, that's 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCUR Up to Date. Well, not a year goes by without hearing of one orchestra or another having financial trouble, and oftentimes those troubles will turn into strikes by musicians or management lockouts. Occasionally, an orchestra will go under. But that's not been the case with the Kansas City Symphony. In fact, in May, the orchestra and its musicians announced that they had negotiated a new agreement that would raise salaries of musicians by almost 20% over the next 4 years. And they got this contract done a full year before the current one expired. So what's going on? The Symphony's Executive Director, Frank Byrne, is sticking around. And with us to discuss all this also is Brian Rood. He's a trumpet player with the Kansas City Symphony who chaired the Musicians Negotiating Committee. Brian, nice to have you. Welcome.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having us.
Well, Brian, this isn't the first time negotiations have gone so well. What is it about the musicians of the Kansas City Symphony and the orchestra's management that they managed to get along so well?
Well, we're very fortunate in Kansas City to have a long-standing culture of mutual respect and trust amongst the various constituents, whether it's the board, the management, the rest of the staff, the musicians, our auxiliaries, and the community. And by doing that, we're able to focus on our objectives and realize our dreams that much more quickly than perhaps elsewhere around the country.
I can't help but wonder, Frank, you know, based on what Brian is saying here, why is that the case here in Kansas City but not so common in so many other cities around the country?
It's difficult without knowing all of the intricacies of other organizations
sure.
to know exactly why that is. But I can say that to echo what Brian said, we have built this culture intentionally. I've been here going on 16 years, and it has evolved over that period. And I feel like we are in a marvelous place here. When I think about our musicians, Brian and his colleagues, I think of them truly as my colleagues and my friends, because in my mind, I am a musician. That's what I wanted to do when I grew up. You know, it's what I trained to do. So when I sit down to work with our musicians on an issue or to resolve a challenging situation or to think about the future, I'm thinking about people who have shared objectives with those that I have. And we talk together in the most collaborative and the most thoughtful way. And that degree of respect that Brian alluded to is just something that I think continues to grow. When we negotiated this last contract, which actually starts next season because we were, as you said,
A year ahead of time,
we sat down with this shared objective that we were all rowing in the same direction.
And Brian, you got this thing done without attorneys?
Well,
anyone in America do anything anymore without attorneys?
I think attorneys are certainly helpful, and they have their place, and they helped us and will continue to help us with some of the other issues that we talk with. But it's true that we did these negotiations face-to-face without attorneys present at the table. And that, again, is because of the mutual trust and collaboration that we've established over these past few years. I just wanted to add a little bit to what Frank said. For an orchestra to be successful, you need to have continuity in the leadership all the way through the organization.
Mm-hmm.
And Kansas City is very blessed to have that. We have members of the board who have been together longer than I've been here, over 20 years. And that is the same way, certainly, Frank starting his 16th year. Michael Stern is our music director, has been here for the better part of that. And you get to know people, you get to trust them, and you get to build upon those relationships. And really, that's what it's about. It's about the people.
You know, Frank Byrne, the cost of living here obviously is lower than many other cities. I'm wondering, what role did salaries in other cities, or our peer cities for that fact, for that matter, play in negotiating with musicians of the Kansas City Symphony?
It is a strategic objective of our organization to compensate our musicians more fairly compared to other organizations. Our base salary here, we don't even have to look to the coasts, where people may say it's not comparable, but across the state, the musicians of the St. Louis Symphony make considerably more than our musicians do, and quite honestly, I don't think that's fair.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working to advance the salaries here because, quite honestly, these are marvelous artists who dedicate their lives to this, and they deserve everything that we can possibly do. But another hallmark of our success is that we have grown responsibly.
Hmm. Brian, just quickly, the musicians of the symphony play more than just concerts on the stage of Helzberg Hall. They also perform as the pit orchestra for the opera and the ballet. What role does that have in salaries? How does that play into all this?
Well, we have contracts that the symphony has with both the opera and the ballet, and they're part of our contracted fee income, and they're very important parts of not only our budget, but especially the relationships that we have with those organizations. You know, the three of us are the resident companies here in the Kauffman Center,
right,
and we need all three companies to be strong for Kansas City to remain its vibrant self that it is right now, particularly artistically.
That's Brian Root, a trumpet player with the symphony. Frank Byrne, the executive director. Gentlemen, thanks a lot for sticking around and explaining why everyone's so happy here in Kansas City with the symphony, the players and management and everybody else.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, anyone who has attended a performance at the Kauffman Center sees what goes on stage, but rarely do they get to see the behind-the-scenes action, whether it's dressing rooms or offstage space for scenery, high-tech LED lighting or trap doors. The technical details of the Kauffman Center are key in putting on professional performances. Joining us now to talk about how these key qualities of the Kauffman Center and how they differ from the Lyric Theater and other spaces around town is Keith Brumley. He's resident scenic designer and technical director for the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. Keith, welcome. Nice to have you.
It's nice to be here.
How long have you been with the Lyric Opera?
30-plus years.
So you know your way around a little bit.
I do, yes.
Well, the Mural Kauffman Theater has just a few advantages over spaces like the Lyric. Where do you want to start?
Oh, gosh. Let's start at the back door.
Yeah, okay.
The dock for the Lyric, you could have one truck that would back up to the dock, and then you opened the doors, you brought the scenery out, and you immediately had to bend it hard to the right.
Hmm.
Most scenery doesn't do that. The new dock is a lovely space where you can have three trucks queued up at a time. You open the truck, you open the garage door, you open the door to the side of the stage, and you roll it directly out of the truck to center stage.
Wow.
No hallways, no bends, no carrying things in through the front doors of the auditorium, over the pit, and onto the stage. We've done all of that before. We don't have to do it anymore.
So your life has improved, Keith, it sounds like.
I believe so, yeah.
What else would you point to?
I would point to an improved grid height. The old grid was 65. The new grid is 75 feet, so we can have a more spacious and atmospheric look above. The stage is wider, so we have a little more wing space. It is significantly deeper. It's the old stage was 35 feet deep. The new stage is 50 feet deep with an additional 8-foot deep alcove where you can put up scaffolding for rear projections. So projections are now something that we do regularly. We've had some wonderful projection shows. All of that is great. The orchestra pit is larger. We can accommodate a larger orchestra.
Do you remember a time at the Lyric when you were trying to stage a production and you were thinking to yourself, Keith, this dog just ain't going to hunt?
Pick a show.
Really? Almost. It was that challenging.
Every show was a real thrill putting it onto the Lyric stage because from the Russell Patterson days through the Ward days to now, everybody wanted to do the biggest and best operas they could. And when I started, I was young and foolish, and I was more than happy to put the biggest scenery I could think of on
stage.
Yeah. And I learned my lessons, but it was always a trick trying to get the scenery to work in the Lyric, and it was real Tetris. There wasn't a broom closet that didn't have scenery stuck in it at some time or another.
Tell us about a production you worked on here at the Kaufman, Keith, that just couldn't be done anywhere else in Kansas City.
Well, I think our opening production of Turandot fits that description quite handily. It was, I was given walking orders to make it as big as humanly possible. We had never worked in the theater before, so we were sort of flying blind, but we filled this place. The goal was to make this look like the biggest stage in the world, and we did the best job we could, and there wasn't a square inch that wasn't that didn't contain all sorts of Chinese artifacts. So
we've been asking our listeners all morning to chime in with their favorite performances here at the Kaufman Center. 816-235-2888 is our phone number here. Randy Heitmeyer from Kansas City chimed in with this recommendation. There are so many performances that have been so wonderful that it's difficult to choose. I would have to say that the performance that most astounded me was the Lyric Opera's production of Turandot. When the curtain went up, it took my breath away, and the whole production was simply sublime.
Oh, that's nice.
Not bad. Eh?
That's nice, yeah.
Yeah. John Spell of Overland Park said this, we started taking our kid to the symphony when she turned three. It's one of our favorite things to do as a family. I loved Harry Potter and she loved the Disney Family show. We look forward to it for months in advance. Lots of good memories out there. What's your favorite memory? What's your personal favorite?
My personal favorite, wow, what would that be? I will always have fond memories of the Turandot. I also was very pleased and relieved to bring in some of our old scenery from the warehouse. Our La Boheme production that we built for the Lyric came in. It looked great. It worked better. The Carmen that we just finished last season with, which was a record breaker for us, was scenery from previous generations of the Lyric. And it came in, and it fits great on the stage. The thing is, the new theater, you bring in the scenery, there's more room, there's more elbow room, the scenery and the performers, everybody just breathes more freely. It's really great.
What's still missing, Keith? Is there one detail that you think was overlooked? I'm not asking you to kick a gift horse in the mouth here, but is there something that you sort of wish had been tweaked a little bit?
This is a really, really good theater. Everything about it works really well. It was extremely well thought out. If there was one thing I wish we had a little more of, it was wing space.
Really?
Yeah, wing space. The depth is good.
That
the
means
height
what
is good.
Exactly?
Wing space is the right-to-left space outside the picture frame of the stage.
Ah.
So we still have to occasionally, when we push things off, how to figure to have a hard right or a hard left turn to sort of get the rear end of it out of sight lines.
Yeah.
So... But other than that, and then, you know, you've got performers scattering and squishing up against the wall while the scenery rolls by. But
you're still pretty satisfied.
I'm pretty darn satisfied. Yes, I am.
Well, that's Keith Brumley. He's the resident scenic designer and technical director for the Lyric Opera of Kansas City. Keith, I appreciate it very much.
Well,
thanks
for having me.
You bet. Again, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're coming to you live and on the fifth anniversary of the Kaufman Center for the Performing Arts here in downtown Kansas City. We're sitting in the great hall of this terrific facility looking to the south. They've just brought over some sun visors over the top ceiling here so that we don't need our sunglasses to be sitting here any longer. And when people see Kansas City ballet dancers on the stage of the Muriel Kaufman Theater, they hear music, but it's from an orchestra hidden away in a pit. A downstage of those musicians from the Kansas City Symphony is Ramona Passengru, the music director of the Kansas City Ballet. She joins us now, and so nice to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you so much. My pleasure.
Ramona, you do see much more than you do much more than conduct an orchestra during performances. What does your role entail exactly?
Well, when you conduct for ballet, you need to know the choreography very intimately so that you know where the phrasing is for the dancers. You need to know where they're supposed to be on stage. If they're not in the right place, you need to know how each dancer moves so you can adjust tempo for them. And the wonderful thing about live music with dance is you let the dancer achieve his maximum, and at the same time, the music maintain its, you know, its wonderful quality. So it's this beautiful melding where, for me, those two parts together are greater than the two parts.
It sounds like you're juggling a lot of moving parts here.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, what's it like for the dancers when they go from rehearsing with you at the piano at the Bollinger Center and you get on the stage at the Kaufman Theater and then you hear a full orchestra?
Well, there's not too much of a bump, and that's the thing that's very good about me being in the studio playing for the dancers. I understand the tempos they need. I understand the spacing issues. I've also, at that point, gotten cues from lighting designers and scenic things that may have to move in and out that I need to be aware of so that the timing is right. So when I get to the orchestra, the same person's running the ship, so there should not be a bump, and usually there is not.
Well, just to be clear here, so the dancers are well choreographed and timed, but you're following them as opposed to them following you?
Oh, it's the chicken and the egg syndrome.
Yes. What is it?
It's both.
Oh,
we're
really?
Both aware of what's happening, and the dancers know how the music should be. I know how the steps should be. And there's this wonderful connection that I really feel here with the Kansas City Ballet dancers, where we're really feeling where we both are. I love it if they give me an inclement that they're going to need a balance held a little longer, that I can do that for them. But they know that they're stretching it.
How do you know that? What's the clue they give you?
You watch body language, and that's one of the reasons I'm in the studio so much. Every dancer who has solos move differently. They may have a deeper plie, a higher jump, but still be on the beat. But I need to know where it is that they are comfortable, and that's what is so wonderful about being resident with a ballet company. You know the dancers very well.
So how nervous are you before a performance, given what you're facing here, the challenges you're up against?
Not at all.
Really?
Mm-mm. That's the fun part.
Because?
Because I have a fantastic symphony to conduct. I'm making my favorite music. I'm doing my favorite thing with some of the most lovely dancers. What could make you nervous about that?
Wow. What happens if a dancer makes a misstep? I mean, do you make up for it, or do the dancers catch you up to your music?
Well, that's thinking on your feet. You have to know what the problem is. I can tell you a very good example that was very obvious. We did Alice in Wonderland. Alice grows to 30 feet in the middle of the stage. At that point, she's supposed to shrink. Alice hung there. Alice didn't move. And I had flute players holding a note for eternity. I'm waiting for her to move. She didn't move. Luckily, the production team and I have we have plans for issues like this.
I was going to say, what is plan B in a situation
plan
like
B
this?
Plan B is I have a phone on my podium. And so she brought the curtain in. That's the cue that I need to stop. We decided who decides if something's wrong, who stops. So we let production decide if the curtain's coming in. At that point, I got on the phone because I know the score really well. I said, we're going back, and the production people are on score on the side of the pit. I said, go back to the middle of page 35. And for the orchestra, I said, that's letter F. Tell her to, when she comes down, to just look at me, and I'll give her a downbeat. And that's how we went on.
You're making me nervous just hearing all this. That is really flying by the seat of your pants. What's it like conducting from the pit of this theater versus the Lyric?
Oh, it's night and day. It changed all of our lives. This pit is so wonderful, and especially compared to what we had in the Lyric. One of the things I really, really love about this pit, it has elevators in the floor. So it's possible to split level the floor of the pit. I have to be high enough when I'm conducting that my head is actually higher than the stage. So I need to see the person's foot actually hit the floor so I know if they're on the music. Because I am so high, if people are at the lower level straight across in the pit, they're staring at my ankles. They are not seeing my arms. So this pit splits, and I use a triple split. So there are three tiers in the pit. The back tier is much lower than the front. So when they're looking at their music, they're at an angle where they can see my hands conduct. Much easier for the orchestra. They don't get cricks in their neck. Much easier for them to follow me.
But you're out of sight of the audience.
No, they can see my head. In fact, I've had people pet my hair and talk to me.
What do you mean, pet your hair?
I mean, I had someone come behind me and stroke my hair gently. And as the woodwinds, eyes got very big as they're looking at me and up, and I just kept going. So yes, it's very intimate with the audience.
And this person was petting your hair. Do you have any reason what the motivation was?
I have no idea.
You never got to the bottom
of
that later on?
No, I was busy at that time. I was in the middle of battle scene of Nutcracker.
Yeah. So what's the one thing you want ballet audiences to know about your job?
I think I have the best job in the world.
Really?
I get to make beautiful music. I'm with people moving beautifully all day long. I can't imagine doing anything else.
You don't strike me as a person who gets overly excited. You can handle difficult moments fairly calmly.
Yeah, I do have a nickname of the human Valium, but we'll...
Is that what you're known for?
Yeah, I don't really stress a lot about music. If I've done my job, I know what I'm doing. The dancers know what they're doing. There is absolutely no need to be nervous.
Well, you just heard from the human Valium. That's Ramona Passengrew. She's music director of the Kansas City Ballet, and thank you very much. That's just terrific.
My pleasure.
You were just interesting.
Well, thank you.
I never met anyone who was called the human Valium before. That's just great. Thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Okay, again, if you're just joining us this morning, you're listening to Up to Date. We're coming to you live from the Kauffman Center. We're in downtown Kansas City on the 5th anniversary of this magnificent structure. And if you look at publicity material for the Kansas City before 2001, you'll probably see the Nelson Atkins and its shuttlecocks and maybe the Country Club Plaza. But now you'll see another site, the dual metal shell and glass walls and ceilings of the Kauffman Center. Joining us now to discuss the Kauffman Center as an architect beacon in our town is Steve Paul. He's a former arts writer and editor for the Kansas City Star. And Stephen, how are you?
Hey, Steve.
Always good to see you. Yeah. How important was it to Kansas City to make the Kauffman Center a focal point for this city?
Well, you know, I want to say something. I want to back up just a little bit because no one yet in listening to the show so far has mentioned Julia Irene Kauffman, whose effort going back 20 years to put her mother's vision of a performing arts center onto the planet really needs to be applauded in town.
It was a much longer road than maybe a lot of people recognize.
It was a long road. And some years ago, 15 years ago, was I'd like to count the beginning of my history with the Kauffman Center, because that's when I did a fairly major profile of Julia Irene Kauffman.
Mm-hmm.
And no one remembers a word of that, which I kind of look back kind of proudly at, but unfortunately it was published at the very end of October 2001, and if you'll remember, 10 days later, 9/11 happened, and nobody was talking about the
Kauffman. It was published in September, you're saying, that year.
It was actually the end of August, so it's 12 days.
And you're saying she's been overlooked largely. It would be too much.
Well, she's not. She's very much not one to call attention to herself.
Mm-hmm.
But her effort, and you know, just the little things that you think about in the creation of this place, sitting in the American restaurant with the architect Moshe Safdie, looking and seeing this hillside, and he, you know, draws a drawing on the napkin, the proverbial napkin shot of what he thinks the Kauffman Center can look like.
And that sort of was what it became.
That was the beginning of it. I mean, that was certainly among the beginning moments of this project. But, you know, through 15, 16 years of planning, through the recession, through all that crazy fundraising, through all the budget-busting, you know, cost overruns and that kind of thing, just kind of the building of this place, and then the incredibly complicated aspects of this building. You know, we're sitting not inside one building, but we're sitting inside three buildings,
mm-hmm.
you know. How the two halls were built separately and acoustically separate, and they're covered by this architectural shell. I mean, that's kind of an interesting fact.
Mm-hmm.
How I'm not sure if there are 28 or 30 of these metal cables that hold the shell up, and they're attached to a wall that's 50 concrete wall that's 50 feet deep, you know, outside the front. And if I'm remembering this detail right, each one of those cables carries about 500,000 pounds of torque to hold this structure up. So the making of this building was rather extraordinary, and kind of watching it happen and watching Julia, you know, intimately involved in how things turned out, I think is worth remembering.
So then going back, how important was it to Kansas City, Steve, to make the Kauffman Center a focal point for this city?
Well, remember, it came shortly after the creation of the block building at the Nelson Atkins, which put the city on an architectural landmark a way that we hadn't been for many, many years. This just added to it, and added to it big way. The hilltop location certainly was a big part of it. The stunning skyline shots, the beauty shots, all those things that, you know, photographers just landed here to take pictures.
What do you hear from architectural critics around the country mm-hmm. about this building? How was it received initially? What's said about it today?
You know, it got fairly well received. In a way, it's Softy has done lots of interesting buildings. This ranks up there, but he's done more spectacular buildings, and in some ways more successful buildings.
Mm-hmm.
This is fine. I'm not to disparage what he did here. I mean, there are criticisms to make about certain aspects, certain details, but it's certainly, for Kansas City, an incredible or really a major architectural landmark.
How will the proposed UMKC Downtown Arts Campus, so much talked about here, fit in with the Kauffman Center's architecture and how all this is going to look as we look to the south mm-hmm. here where this new campus is going to be?
The architecture is one thing, but the actual the presence of 600 or 700 music students and faculty members and programs, it just adds amazing energy,
a life force.
Yeah,
here.
Was kind of a brilliant stroke, and I really hope it comes to fruition.
I was
going to
say, how
years.
Confident are you about that? Obviously, it depends on action from the Missouri General Assembly, and that's always.
Yeah,
a tricky proposition.
It is tricky. They've supposedly committed funds. I mean, there's still a lot of backdoor, smoke-filled room conversation, I'm sure, has to happen before it becomes a reality. But, I'm pretty confident, and your next guest is probably, maybe has a different, has more insight into that as well.
Just before you go, Steve, you've attended a lot of performances mm-hmm. here. Can you name one or two that you aren't going to be forgetting anytime soon?
Well, luckily, I've had great, not honor, but I've been watching and listening to the symphony for many years now. Last January, I remember thinking and being blown away. They did Stravinsky's Petrushka Suite, and I remember thinking, it's percussive, it's angular, it's really challenging piece, and I remember thinking at the time and when it was done that I had never heard the symphony play so well, so aggressively, so beautifully in a piece to date. And it's just been wonderful to kind of listen, hear the symphony mature. You had a great conversation with Frank and Brian earlier. And, they're not just blowing smoke. And it really is great achievement.
That's Steve Paul, former writer and editor, editorial page editor of the Kansas City Star. Steve, it's always good to see you. Thanks
for having
much.
Me back, Steve.
You bet. It might seem odd to end this program instead of beginning it with the president and CEO of the Kauffman Center, but we're bringing it full circle here. Paul Schoffer is president and chief executive officer of the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. And Paul, congratulations on the anniversary. It's a big day, big time here.
Well, thank you so much. It's been it's amazing to imagine that it's already been 5 years, and
very
there
hard
is
to believe.
Much cause for celebration.
Well, the Kauffman Center took a little longer, as Steve Paul just said, to build than anticipated. I'm not sure everything was perfect when the Kauffman Center opened. What changes have you made to it over the years?
Yeah, we've made a few changes specifically to enhance the overall patron experience, to certainly make the comfort of the patron experience better. So a couple examples there. When we opened up the doors, we didn't initially offer a dining option. So about a year and a half ago, we started offering a dining option so people can come to performances here at the Kauffman Center and have the whole ball of wax there and go to one stop and have a fine dining experience that complements the performing arts experiences. Internally, we've also made a few adjustments along the way. People have adapted to the building, no doubt about it, but we certainly always want to enhance their comfort, the proximity of how they're entering the building. So we've added some great signage to help with getting to their seats.
Right.
And we have this amazing volunteer program with over 500 highly trained and wonderful and friendly volunteers that help people out at every performance.
You also have your own performance series here. Tell us about it.
We do. We have our Kauffman Center Presents series throughout the year, and that's intended to complement the great works that we have brought to our stages through our three resident organizations as well as community arts organizations. So over the course of the year, we'll add in new and unique or different genres And it's really been very much embraced by our community. So that will include performances like we had this summer by Brian Wilson and the Beach Boys, mm-hmm. or Boy George and Culture Club, or we have Kansas coming up, or Black Violin coming up.
Yeah.
Performances like that, as well as our really terrific National Geographic series. There's five presentations through the course of the year.
We have many of them on our show.
Yes, yeah. Yes. And they're all sold out.
I'm really struck by one thing. You know, when this building was built, there was all kinds of talk of, you mentioned restaurants a few minutes ago, of restaurants in the area being built to sort of complement what happened here. We haven't seen a whole lot of that. I'm wondering why.
Yeah. You know, there's an aspect of that that I think people are still adapting to the whole downtown renaissance and figuring mm-hmm. out how that's all going to mesh together. But as we talked about earlier as we see the UMKC Conservatory come in, and we're seeing businesses come in here at pretty aggressive rates, I think the restaurants and that side of it will follow soon after.
How is the downtown performing arts campus going to change this place, change this neighborhood?
Yeah. You know, no doubt it's just going to add to the energy of the neighborhood. Anytime you bring in hundreds of youth, it's mm-hmm. going to change those dynamics. I think it's going to further enhance the quality of performing arts in our community as we have more people engaged with the Kauffman Center and the whole Crossroads Arts District.
What's been the biggest challenge for you since you took over the CEO post from Jane Hsu?
Yeah,
I mean, fundraising. What's the big challenge?
Yeah, you know, for us, it's really just a matter of continuing to respond to our community's interests and needs, and ensuring that we are truly, as our mission states, providing performing arts experiences for everyone in our community. And mm-hmm. the key word there is everyone. So that goes back to our Kauffman Center Presents programming, where we're trying to diversify that in manners where we're bringing new audiences that engage with the Kauffman Center. A great example is Los Tigres del Norte, mm-hmm. which was here just a few months mm-hmm. ago. Something in the range of 60 to 70% of the audience had never stepped foot in the Kauffman Center before. So we're going to see more and more of those kinds of performances where we're really connecting with new audiences.
You know, what words can a performance goer say that makes you smile? And I'm going to ask you the same thing about what words might make you cringe.
The ones that make me smile really always have to do when they're bringing family members and children in particular mm-hmm. to performances, and they talk about what a spectacular experience it was for them to connect with their children in different ways. The ones that make me cringe, there hasn't been much, and I'm really
but
not stretching the truth. We might have an issue where somebody says they want more dining experiences, as yeah. you had said earlier, and there's not as many restaurants as we anticipate we'll see in the future. But that's a part of why we responded with the dining experience.
You know, Paul, we're sitting here in the Brandon Meyer Grand Hall, the foyer outside Helzberg Hall and Kauffman Theater. I'm just curious, what's it like to air condition this place in a hot Kansas City summer?
You know, it's
cheap.
It's amazing, but it works, and it works well. Interestingly, our first year in the Kauffman Center, our utility bills were somewhere in the range of $1 million. This past year, working with our engineers and our terrific crew, it's about $450,000. And as wow. you can tell, we're comfortably sitting in here, not sweltering.
Give me 20 seconds. Tell us about the activities going on today beginning at 5 o'clock.
You bet. Bravo KC starts the celebration. It's from 5 to 9. We'll have live performing arts experiences going on both indoor stages within Brandmeier Hall and certainly outdoors. KC crew will be here with lawn games. We'll have food and drink. And, of course, it is a birthday celebration, so we'll have a birthday cake contest.
Paul Schoffer is President and Chief Executive Officer of the Kauffman Center for the Performing Arts. And Paul, thanks very much. Happy anniversary. Thanks for hosting us here today. I sure appreciate it.
Thank you so much. It's great to have you here.